I would argue that much of the things that we are measuring today is irrelevant, but we're measuring it because we can.
Right.
And because it looks good as a PowerPoint slide.
Well, that's all...
When we're presenting to the board every 3 months.
That's what
but
we
whether it's actually effective,
yeah.
Whether it's actually moving the needle, I would dispute that.
What's up, everyone? It's Eric Vessels with Tactiful. Welcome back to another episode of Tactiful Tuesdays. We are on episode 12, and no, we're not going to talk about eggs, but we are on a dozen episodes of Tactiful Tuesdays. I've got my good friend G. Rana Sinha with me, who is our guest. G's the CEO and founder of Kexino, a marketing agency that specializes in helping startups and small businesses grow through strategic brand positioning, content marketing, digital transformation. Really a pro. I've known him for a really long time. A lot of you in the industry will know him. He's got a career spanning over 35 years, which means, like me, he's old now.
Thank you.
So you witnessed the evolution of marketing from traditional media to the digital landscape. Based in Strasbourg, France, where I've been and visited, which is a lovely city. He's a frequent speaker, writer, and consultant. You may have seen him recently at the Inkish Non-Event, where he was a speaker there. Wonderful session. Recommend looking that up. Really, really good stuff. But yeah, I've known him for a long time for his candid insights on branding, storytelling, and marketing strategy. One of the smartest people I know. One of the funniest people I know. G, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Eric. Delighted to be invited, as I say.
How's that for an introduction? It's nearly as long as Frank Romano. Frank Romano
pretty
has,
darn
has,
good.
Frank Romano.
I didn't like the 35-year reference, to be honest. It means we started when we were 5 years old.
You could have gone without that. You know, whatever. Like so many of my really good friends, we met in a bar. I find that that's just...
This is true. Yes, it was a hotel bar. Yes, Rosemont, Illinois.
Yeah. One of the things, there are several people that I will interview on the podcast, and we will not talk about a lot of things. When I interviewed Warren, we could not talk about Prague, so we will not talk anymore about the bar. Ask us sometime. It's a good story. So let's get into it. I want to talk a little bit about the evolution of marketing. You've been in marketing since the days of dial-up and internet and AOL CDs, I think. How have you seen marketing strategies evolve? And what, more importantly, what core principles remain unchanged? There's got to be some core things that are just timeless, but then there's got to be some things that are evolving and changing as technology changes, as the marketplace changes. Love to hear what you think.
Well, I think you hit a very rich seam of conversation here.
That's what we're going for.
In my mind, well, yeah. Rich themes are always good, especially if you're a needlepoint worker. I think if we go back in the day, really from sort of when good advertising and marketing took off, which was around the time of Birnbach, I would say, sort of Mad Men, post-Mad Men era, really.
So what era of time is this that you're talking about?
50s, early 60s.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Really?
50s, yeah. Early 60s, kind of a golden era.
Yeah, Bill Birnbach, who later formed an agency, Doyle Dane Birnbach, which became DDB, and lots of versions of that over time. The marketers of the day, they were more concerned with concerned with working out how the human mind works so that they could create ads and messaging that resonated. And if you're particularly nostalgic for a particular date and time in advertising history, trying to not be romantic about it, certainly there is another rich seam of very evocative and memorable advertising that came out of the 60s, 70s, you know, even early 90s, I'd argue, which were high quality, highly effective, highly memorable, all of the boxes that need to be checked for effective messaging. Then something happened. Digital happened. The internet happened. Marketing technology happened. We started getting into the ability to capture data and target very precisely customers with our messages using bits and pieces of technology, which is all great and wonderful and fantastic. But along the way, we lost something. And what we lost was the memorability, the ability to recall these extremely honed and targeted messages.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because we spent all our time and attention and money on this technology stuff, and we forgot about the creative execution component.
Yeah, so
the
kind
stuff
of the
that actually makes it work.
The internet seemed to kind of usher in this age of metrics, right? Like this, we can really find target and we can know the clicks and we can know the views or whatever, where before it was more about creativity and messaging. And instead, because I couldn't be found pre-internet, really. I couldn't
much of that data just was hidden from us. We couldn't measure to that level. I would argue that much of the things that we are measuring today is irrelevant, but we're measuring it because we can.
Right.
And because it looks good as a PowerPoint slide.
Well, that's all.
When we're presenting to the board every 3 months.
That's what
but
we
whether it's actually effective. Now.
Yeah.
Whether it's actually moving the needle, I would dispute that. And when I say moving the needle, I mean in compared to the amount of money we're spending versus spending nothing. Because that's the other thing about measurement. We're often not comparing it to the status quo, which seems a little bit bizarre because, I mean, the last stat I read, it was something like 49% of B2B sales fail with the reason that the prospect didn't see the value in any of the providers and ended up buying nothing. They were so confused.
Information overload.
There wasn't an obvious choice which was head and shoulders above the rest of them.
But I was
rather than make a bad decision, they walked away and made no decision.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's what we always tend to do with technology, is we overuse it.
Or we use it for the wrong things,
yeah.
Right? Just because you can doesn't mean you should, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, look at AI, for example. AI is great at some things, sucks at others. And we're trying to fit it into things that it doesn't necessarily lend itself to.
Yeah.
Criticize while we should be using it for things that it is very good at doing.
Yep.
And then laud it and applaud it and encourage it. But, well, you know, AI is a different thing. We were talking about marketing and that sort of thing. So I think we've come full circle now where we're spending a ton of money on all of these marketing platforms and we've got all the measurements and all of the metrics in there. And yet still the effectiveness of our marketing is falling off a cliff. Not only that, customers, end users, civilians is a term I use, right? People outside our industry have never been more pissed off with us as marketers, as advertisers. So the quality, the perceived quality is dropping. So if we've got all of these, this technology and this MarTech and this AI and all the rest of it, which we've had for years, right? Customer audience profiling has been around for at least 15 years, maybe longer. Okay. So if we've got all of this stuff, why is the effectiveness falling? Because we've exorcised the creative execution out of the equation.
So because what would you say is the core thing that hasn't changed? Is that the behavioral economics? I know you're highly, highly invested in knowing about that and teaching about the behavioral side and the persuasion side and the psychology of it. Is that something that hasn't changed? And it's just the technology around that concept that's changed?
I think the technology, what's happened is that we've believed the people who have inherent skin in the game for the use of the technology. We're listening to the wrong people. It's like, you know, asking your drug dealer, should you buy another hit of heroin? Well, of course, the drug dealer is going to say yes, right? We're getting our information from the wrong sources. So marketing technology providers are telling us, you need to do it like this. By the way, that just happens to be how our system works.
Yeah. Oh, you need to judge it based on this metric. We're the only one that can give you this metric.
Exactly. Exactly. It's exactly that.
Oh, that's funny.
So we've got to this place now where we're believing the wrong people and we're trying to shoehorn marketing into an engineering of physics type model, right? Like it works with other areas of the business. Okay.
Sure.
You know, for manufacturing, R&D, you know, certainly finance, all of these things. We have, you know, perfect utility, perfect transparency, perfect truth. We know each element of a system and we know its contribution to other elements of the system if we're looking to make greater efficiencies within that system. Okay.
Yeah.
But in marketing, we're not looking to optimize for a system. We're looking to optimize effectiveness around a human being, right? Now, a human being is not a logical, rational, pragmatic, mechanical entity, okay? And the way that we make buying decisions and the contextual influences that form those buying decisions are hard to measure, and they change depending on the context. So these are all scary things if you've been brought up in an engineering or a finance, economic type of background.
Yeah, because you're going to run into situations where you have to sit back and go, that makes no sense.
Exactly.
That behavior makes no sense. Why are they doing that? Why are they responding to this email subject line in this way, but not clicking at all on this one? Like, I have the data, but it occurs to me that, like, the data is all well and good. And in the printing industry, we are known to just take technology and use it for the sake of technology. I'll use QR codes as an example. We didn't know how the hell to use QR codes. Luckily, or I shouldn't say luckily, but an outgrowth of the COVID era was we kind of figured out the best possible way to use them, right? Because the QR codes got us through COVID in a big way.
We had to learn very quickly.
Yeah. And so now I see the application of those much more in line with what makes sense and not just slapping a QR code on everything, including a road sign, which, to be fair, might be one of the most dangerous things I've ever seen is a gigantic road sign with a QR code. It's like, please don't scan that. I'm driving here. So,
or in a metro station where you've got no signal, you know, those sorts of things.
Exactly. Yeah. Map your way home with no signal. Have at it. So I do want to cover one thing that we recently did together. As everyone knows, Tactiful Software Solutions has a division now called Tactical that I'm running. We run a lot of different trainings and educations, one of which is a 8-week digital embellishment boot camp where we try to take people from start all the way to finish in terms of learning about it, how to market it, how to sell it, how to produce it. And you were one of my subject matter experts, are one of my subject matter experts on the tactical bench. Recently did a session in a boot camp that talked about balancing sales and branding. You talked about balancing sales activation with brand building and how the two are related. I wondered if you could share some practical tips for the folks, because I think it's a super interesting discussion, how to balance those two and the importance of the relationship between the two. And I think a lot of people separate them, don't necessarily relate sales activity with branding activity and how they affect one another. Talk about that a little bit.
Absolutely. Now, firstly, I should say that this isn't my unique thoughts on the subject. This is what marketing geeks tend to sort of talk about and have been talking about for about at least the last 5 years, probably longer than that.
On your private listservs, you guys talk about this.
On all of that. So no, we use tin cans and string, actually, because we don't like digital, right? So we go old school. To understand the importance of splitting your marketing between longer-term brand awareness-type work with the shorter-term sales activation stuff.
Now, what do you mean when you say sales activation? Is that like a promotion? Is that like a short-term campaign?
Most people think marketing or indeed advertising, what people think of what they think marketing and advertising is the sales activation stuff. So by sales activation stuff, it's buy one, get one free,
right?
Free delivery till the end of the month, only available in blue, but you know, all of these sorts of ask for the sale, transactional,
sales activation, transactional you're trying to move stuff. Product.
Right. It's a transactional thing. Brand awareness is, I wouldn't say it's the opposite, but it's more talking about the company or the product, the values of that product. It's coming across from things which are a bit more human, a bit more intuitive, a bit more nonverbal, a bit more emotional in their sense. And a typical example would be pretty much every single Coca-Cola ad you've ever seen, right? You'd never see a Coca-Cola say, you know, 12 packs of Coke for the price of 10 or something, okay?
Right.
It's always, you know, holidays are coming or whatever other things it's around. And the reason why they do these is to form memory structures in your brain so that when you are in the market for buying whatever it is the vendor is selling, they are one of the people that you think of within that consideration set. And the reason why you need to do that comes down to a thing called the 95-5 rule, which again is not mine. It's come up by a guy by the name of Professor John Dawes from the Ehrenberg Bass Institute of Adelaide in Australia, which is the world's foremost marketing research marketing university in the world. And it was a study that was commissioned by LinkedIn. And he looked at a gazillion data points and came up with a basic rule of thumb. It's not, you know, set in stone. There's variability depending on product and audience and environment and context and goodness knows whatever else. What the findings show that when you send out a piece of messaging to your total addressable market, your TAM, okay, 95% of the people who see your messaging are not in the position to purchase whatever it is you're selling at that very second they see your messaging. Now, they may be in the future, maybe tomorrow, maybe next week, maybe in 6 months' time, depending on what you're selling, right? But not right at the moment. Because of that, calculating ROI is a bit tricky.
That feels like a pretty dire statement in terms of, like...
Well, no, but I mean, you look at it. I mean, if...
95% of the people.
If you're a printer who's just bought a printing press of a certain size, a certain number of units or a certain color gamut, certain productivity, certain paperweight specs, certain inline or offline embellishment capabilities, you know, keeping it on brand, for example, all of that sort of stuff. If you've just bought a press and you see an ad for a press, you're probably not going to buy another press. Now, you might not buy it today, right? You may buy it in a year, 3 year, 5 years' time.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
But what will happen over time, because brand awareness stuff is in the background, it's like just above the threshold of noise, right? It's forming those mental structures in the brain so that when you are in the market for a new press, you think about the Okeekokee 2000, right, as one of the possible presses that purchase.
And that's what drives...
You could think of it as it's like SEO for the brain, okay? It's forming those connections.
And that's what drives sales cycles, right? That's why sales...
Absolutely.
That's why sales cycles are variable, right? Because you've got to do that. I view like branding, what you're sort of talking about is like, to me, sales activation is the transaction, but the branding work is like, well, how it makes me feel, right? But what you're...
All of it is feel.
Yeah, but I feel like branding for me, like when you mentioned a Coke commercial, I felt a certain way, like because I've been marketed at by Coke my entire life.
Your entire life, absolutely.
And I have an affinity for the brand, right? So it's a different feeling than, like you said, when I see the circular that says, you know, a 12 pack is X off or whatever. I have a residual feeling because if it's Coke, I'm like, oh shit, I gotta go get some on
Disney. Exactly, because you have positive feelings, right? So in that way, the transactional nature of that type of communication, you were already looking at Coke as a possible solution to your issue or your problem thirsty.
To kind of strip it down.
This was enough to cure. But the thing is, that sales activation part would probably not have worked, or certainly not have worked as effectively, if that brand activation stuff hadn't been going on in the background until you were ready to buy.
And that's the key. And that's what I wanted to...
And that's the key.
And then the point that I wanted you to get to is that, or wanted us to get to, is that you have to be doing both, right? I think you could sort
absolutely.
Of, you could maybe oversimplify it by saying, and this is something that in different contexts, I think people resonate with and understand, they're strategic and then tactical, right? The branding's kind of more the strategic. It's the bigger picture thing. The tactical are those sales activation points. Well,
the thing is, it's a hard sell. Within many organizations, it's a hard sell because everybody's looking for a direct knee-jerk cause and effect type reaction.
Yeah.
I've spent this, where are the sales? But marketing doesn't work like that. There's inertia involved, not only because of the 95-5 rule, but also because there's latency and effectiveness. The marketing work that you've done last week, last month, 6 months ago, perhaps you're seeing the results right now. And anything that you do today, you won't see until 6, 12, 18 months down the line. Depends what you're selling, obviously. Definitely. Depends on the length of the sales cycle. So there is this delay. So since it's difficult to quantify and amortize over a longer period, the finance people, most of the C-suite, to be honest, not just the finance people, think it's a waste because they can't see any tangible, they can't draw a straight line between the expense and the return.
Sure.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah.
So what happens is you're spending all this money on MarTech and saying, well, we just need to market harder so that they get it. But it doesn't work like that because you've still got to go through that same process of forming those memory structures. So that takes time. And so inevitably they run out of patience or money or both and say, oh, well, you know, this marketing stuff doesn't work. There's no point doing it. It's like, no, marketing does work. It's just that you suck at marketing.
Right.
That's the reason why. And they're just looking at it in the wrong way.
And if you do suck at marketing, and if you can have that much self-awareness, please call G because he can square you away. Last question. What is your favorite thing to do when you're not working?
Playing the piano.
You play the piano?
I play the piano. Well, I listen to music and play the piano, and I try to play what I listen to, which never comes out anywhere close to what I'm playing.
I feel like as your friend of what, over 15 years now? How long has it been?
Oh, no, over 20.
Over 20.
Coming up to 25, I think.
I find out this detail for the first time shooting a podcast. How did I not know you played the piano?
I've been keeping it from you all these years, Eric. Just wanting to keep
our
relationship, keep the spark in our relationship, you see.
Just so you could spring it to me on a podcast. That's awesome.
That's right. It's been planning for all this time.
That's fantastic.
Yes, I try to play the piano. So I play blues, boogie-woogie, dried piano. I play very badly, I must say. And I'm very proud of that, of how sucky I am at playing the piano.
That's okay. Where art's concerned, my personal philosophy is there's no such thing as bad. There's art that I like better than other art, and it's relational. But for me, it's like whatever art that you can do, the act of doing it is perfect. It's awesome, right? Like now, you play.
Synapse connections, right? It's just sort of thinking about other things. It's the process, not the destination.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the most fun that I've ever had is playing music. Like performing specifically on a stage is super fun. And I don't do it nearly enough anymore. I did not know. I'm sort of shocked that I did not know that about you. That's okay, though. I'm sure I'll find out some other stuff. Gee, it's been really great having you. Appreciate you joining the podcast. Lots of insights. And I know you could talk about all of these subjects longer and longer. You can find Gee on LinkedIn, very active. I highly recommend following just for the small bite-sized clips that he puts out because they are thought provokers. They might be like a 2-minute long thing, but you'll be thinking about it. A lot of times I'll watch it and I'll be thinking about it the rest of the day, or it'll spark some kind of thing. So follow G.
That's great. That's the aim. That's the goal.
Yeah, no, really works really well. And he's got this amazing voice with this studio that's way better than mine. I've got to up my game when I move here. Making progress, though. You can see the empty shelves.
Yeah, good. Good my for man. You.
Appreciate you, brother.
Take care.
See you.
And here's an exercise that I would do as I was touring the country, and I would ask people to close their eyes, and I said, I want you to hear the sound of newsprint. And then everybody went, yeah, okay. I want you to hear the sound of a paperback novel. You know, I want you to hear the difference in the sound of magazine paper or the sound of a business card. My point is, we have, in fact, memorized those sounds. They are